It does warm my heart. And people might seem sentimental by saying this, but it does make me happy to see people of all these various intersectional identities becoming more vocal and participatory, I think is the word, or more active and participating in futures thinking and having these conversations. And so I'm really thankful that you're having these conversations and holding these spaces, not only here on Twitter, but also on Clubhouse and the newsletter and the podcast that you do, because it's really great to see all these different people hear all these different voices and perspectives. Because I feel like, as a global futurist, futures thinking, however you want to label yourself, community, it helps us grow and it helps us realize new avenues.
What's one of the things that defines culture, in your opinion, or in your experience and expertise?
So for me, in my viewpoint, I feel like culture, there needs to be a community for it to help it continue to survive. I do believe culture can still exist without the current participate the current members, the current participants of a community still being living and breathing, because I also feel, I personally believe, the written word isn't the only form of, passing on information. There are other avenues. So for me, I believe culture is carried forward by the people who want to keep it alive. Now, I also know it's a little bit privileged to say that, because there are cultures that regrettably weren't able to continue because of, colonialism, imperialism, et cetera, like everything from that intersection of frameworks of oppression. But at least speaking through a pop cultural, subcultural lens, I do feel like, as long as there's someone who has the love and passion of wanting to keep a culture alive, a cultural mindset, that it'll continue. Even if it's just, like from one person to one person, it'll still continue, at least in my opinion. And if the people that are kind of like the solo participant in the culture are able to start sharing that with other people, you'll see it blossom forward. Like, one avenue I saw it, and it's interesting because we slightly talked about the metaverse a few weeks ago. Like, the whole idea of a netizen, an internet citizen. Because as long as you have some form of connection, whether it's through a smartphone, computer, tablet, laptop, you are a citizen of the internet. And internet culture for me is very interesting. And I feel like lately, internet pop culture, subculture has been intriguing me more. And I will say I have a slight bias through how I'm viewing things now, which I'm trying to correct, but I do see things sort of like connecting with internet culture and how that motivates a lot of innovation. Like, one example that I saw during the pan well, one of many examples I saw during the pandemic was the embracing of, virtual digital spaces, like the acceleration of digitization, I think is the term that's being used. as someone who grew up in the 90s and technology was emerging, like this whole concept of Twitch would have never been imaginable to me. And I find Twitch is a very interesting community because originally it was popular with people in the gaming community. And the area of interest spread. Now, regrettably, I got into Twitch during the pandemic, so I wasn't able to see its growth. So I can't really, I'm still in the process of trying to pinpoint when it diversified, you know, what was offered. But during the pandemic, it was an interesting experience because you had a variety of streamers. You know, you had cooking streamers, and you had cooking streamers that were all over the spectrum. You know, you had cooking streams that showcased beginner chefs, and the enjoyment that you got was seeing someone who didn't know what they were doing in the kitchen, but was trying to do their best, and the energy that would be reflected into their chat and their chat was reflecting to the streamer was enjoyable and very heartwarming most of the time, especially when the streamer would make a mistake in, you know, the recipe. Because you'd have moments of hilarity where you're like, oh no, what did they do? And then you also have like other streamers. One that I currently follow, his name is Bambi. His Twitch name is Bambizas. He owns a coffee shop in the Philippines, and his stream could be considered like a comfy stream that you watch to kind of like relax and unwind. Or you could also watch like to study or do other things and have in the background. And it's interesting seeing people live their daily lives and, you know, interacting, because there's like curated playlists on YouTube and ASMR of like coffee houses, coffee spaces, which is, I find interesting because you would have never thought of that existing before. Now, I know those existed before the pandemic, but I did notice there was an increase or an uptick in the creation of, you know, like these playlists. And so I find Twitch a very interesting community because you have also IRL streams, which speaks to the comfortability of people with the metaverse, you know, of digital spaces. Because we have reality TV, and it is a form of reality TV. And at least the ones that I've seen have been pretty unscripted, like very raw. But for me, it's interesting how that became a popular category of watching someone else live their life in a specific city, or kind of them road tripping. And of course, they follow the social distancing and everything. But like, it's interesting seeing a group, a community, you know, growing from this shared experience of something that previously was considered like mundane. Like, you know, 10 years ago, if you would have told me like, oh, people would be really interested in seeing someone grocery shop in Tokyo or biking around doing Uber Eats in New York, I would have been like, really? Is that? But, you know, now having had some experience, you know, with trend research and, you know, a little bit of futures thinking, foresight, it makes sense. Because if you take a look back at pop culture in the 90s, you had shows like Digimon, which is very interesting concept of like a digital, you know, this Digimon stands for digital monster, but that concept that the show showed of having a digital companion that in the show existed IRL alongside you, but also existed in like a fit in the virtual space and the metaverse. And you also saw that with Tamagotchi. And in the 2000s, you saw that with Neopets. So if you take in consideration of people enjoying, the everyday things and taking that to like virtual spaces like Twitch, like, when I started connecting the dots and thinking about like, oh, okay, it actually isn't that surprising.
You mentioned future thinking a little bit, but in your opinion, what's future thinking to you?
Well, since I'm not, schooled, I guess would be the appropriate word, in the futures thinking framework, my answer is going to be, I guess, different than what like an actual futures practitioner or specialist would think. Although, interestingly, side note, I am taking this course on futures thinking specialization on Coursera, so I'm excited for that. But for me, a futures thinking through a cultural futures thinking is looking at all the aspects of culture. What I try to do is use my personal experience as a baseboard and then expand outward from that. So I use my personal interests to kind of lead me to different, articles and videos and, digital communities like Twitch and Discord and Clubhouse and Twitter. And then, try and follow as many diverse voices and thinkers as possible. So that way I can, get an idea sparked. Because it's, for me, coming from a fashion background, is interesting to see how things can come from the most unexpected places. Like, one of my favorite books is actually a illustrated book, and it's called Shoe Fleur, which means literal translation like flower shoe, and it's by Mikhail Cherikov, and it's just a book filled with illustrations of shoes based on various flowers. And I find that like that concept is interesting, of how the most unexpected place or unexpected item can give you inspiration. And for me personally, I think a futures framework, futures thinking through culture, it's, you have to always remember nothing is too insignificant. Like if it doesn't spark a connection in your mind, and for like mapping, I guess, just kind of tuck it away for later and remind yourself like, oh, okay, write it down somewhere. Like I've gotten better about like bookmarking and screenshotting, texts and pictures and, of course, including the URL, so I know where it's from and who to give credit to if I use it. But just to be aware of like, okay, like I might not be able to connect it in this moment, but let me save it because later on I probably will be able to recognize like, oh, okay, there was some significance to this. This is why my mind was telling, my intuition was telling me like, hey, like, because coming from a trend research perspective, one of the methodologies is, if you've seen it three times in different sectors, industries, that there's that, it's a little starting thread. It's a an indicator, a beacon of like, okay, let's follow this. Like, you know, and of course you have to do primary research, which is, you know, like firsthand experience. And then you do secondary research where it's, you know, like the audios, the videos, the books, you know, looking at other insight trend reports from other agencies, other individuals, you know, other specialists in their fields and industries. Because it's interesting how I've realized trends don't really forecast the future as more as they're indicators of the current present, but they help jumpstart futures thinking. Like they help jumpstart conversations of, you know, what can be, like, what can we cultivate together on a global level? What can we do as global citizens?
Thank you for that. Yes, that's interesting. I didn't know about that, but the specialization, I think you're going to be enjoying it. You're going to get a few things to use to your tool set. I've taken it myself. I think it was like last year. It'll be a year in November, December, around that time. But we have, you know, so I'm not sure if I'm going to say it correctly, but if you want to introduce yourself, who you are, your background, and if you have something to say or a question to ask, go right ahead.
Hey, Victor, it's actually, you pronounced it fine, it's Saranya, so that's good. Emmanuel, it's so good to hear all of your thoughts. I think all of the things that you're saying, it's kind of triggering a lot of different questions in my mind too. But I'm totally new to the futures thinking community. I didn't know about it at all. And I think that's the part that I think is such a positive impact about us being globally available in online to be able to have all these conversations. But I think it also brings up a very important concept and for the culture aspect of it. If you have the positive impacts and we're actually talking about bringing in different voices, how do you think that the, I mean, I think there's some parts of it where I've always told myself that there's always one way that you have to keep thinking about it in a pessimistic way. But how do all of these experiences now, do you think that it'll actually start blending into one big culture where we're going to start losing out on the other aspects of people being in different parts of the world? So if you're going to become a global citizen, how do you still maintain the culture of where it is that you're actually coming from? Does that question make sense? Like,
yeah, it does. And I'm so glad you asked that, because and also welcome to Twitter space and welcome to the futures thinking. You and I are both on that journey together. So excited. But I'm glad you asked that question, because I'm always grappling, you know, like having to remind myself, like, how do I keep all my intersectional identities together, but also contributing like to the global cultural mindset? Because it is true, or at least my personal belief is, if one is unaware in a cultural sense of how to maneuver and navigate, and recognizing that everyone has varying intersectional identities, but those varying intersectional identities also have a commonality to them, like there's a common purpose that we all strive for, I do feel like it's very easy for one narrative to overtake it. And especially when speaking on internet subcultures, I always try to be aware of, since I'm coming from a global north, like a Western perspective, to always keep that in check when I'm trying to do like culture insights and remind myself, like, you know, if I'm going to reference another culture or subculture that I'm not a part of, let me look at the thought leaders, the cultural navigators in those spaces and see their work, see how it's expressed through their eyes, through their voice, through their vision, so I can make sure I can understand as much as possible and not, you know, overtake it through my through a Western global North gaze. And I think as long, and again, I might be very hopeful and optimistic about it, but I feel like as long as people continue to recognize that we want equity in the culture, but also recognizing that there's variety in the creators of the culture, and that there's nothing wrong with having this shared goal, but also still keeping true to ourselves and honoring our roots. And I feel like since there's more what's quote unquote, like, I guess what's third culture individuals is what I've read that the terminology is used. I feel since there's more and more people of that, you know, third culture individuals, I feel like we're shaping a unified cultural vision, but we're also recognizing like we have all these different experiences, so we also need to keep them as a pillar of this vision. So I'm hoping I was able to answer some of that question. Let me know.
I also think it's each of our responsibility to make sure that it's also carried forward, right? So I was actually just looking at it as an example for like my nieces. They don't necessarily have as much of a cultural like they don't have that experience as what I did when I was growing up, because they've been brought up in the US and they've grown up and they have some aspects of it because they have my parents also here, and they can kind of feel that. But I think their experience is going to be more towards, you know, what are they learning on YouTube? And it's very funny because sometimes they can totally watch some other culture aspect of it, and then they tend to pick that up. Does that make sense? Like, they don't necessarily follow this culture that we're actually part of. So then it's like a new definition of how we can essentially become a global citizen, but you can be part of so many different cultures and you can identify with different ones.
Yeah, it's interesting because I find myself going through that sometimes, because I'm a child of immigrants. So I'm a first generation individual of Mexican descent. And I'm in the Los Angeles area. So it was interesting for me sometimes when I feel like, oh, this was like, I take it as a what have experienced in my life as like a shared cultural experience, in the sense of like, oh, everyone that was from the 90s in the US experience, and then finding out like, oh no, that's actually kind of like a regional thing, like, you know, like that's maybe like a West Coast thing, an LA thing, and realizing like, oh, okay, like I learned something new today about like how a certain word might be used, or a certain action might be done. But it's interesting because I was reading this report by Trend Bible, and they mostly deal with children's wear and home and interior. And they were talking about the concept of the modern caregiver, and how that really changed during the pandemic. You know, for a lot of individuals, they had to go from solo living or, you know, living with their partner or roommate to going back to living with their parents. So I feel like that all that experience also contributed to the shaping of the younger subset of Generation Z, and it's still kind of up in the air whether they're going to be called Generation Alpha or not. But I find it interesting that that's also going to help shape people, especially when you see it through the lens of like those memes of like, oh, I'm the cool, you know, cool rich aunt, quote unquote rich aunt, you know, like I'm single, but I live my life and I'm happy and I'm content, but I'm going to spoil my, you know, the children of my siblings with all these experiences that I may not have had myself, but I would like to enjoy with them. And especially when you see it through like a shared experience of, you know, someone's home culture, I guess, if you could say, you know, of people getting together. Like, I know it was a meme, but like getting together makes sourdough. But at least for me personally, because I did spend the quarantine with family, kind of like making things, making cultural food together, but also making other cultural foods. Like during the height of self-quarantine here in the US, my younger brother really got into practicing making Japanese food. So he got really good at making like chicken karage, which is, you know, Japanese style fried chicken, and croquettes, crab croquettes, and sushi. So it was interesting seeing how, as a family unit, we cultivated, you know, the culture that was specific to our family, and also like culture in the aspect of like, we helped my parents, you know, make like tacos and other like Mexican food, but also like participating in activities where, like you had mentioned, Eunice's would look at YouTube videos and like partake in cultural activities. Like me and my brother participated in that by, you know, making Japanese food. So I think it's a really interesting how everything kind of intersects for individuals, and you start seeing the communal shared experiences and bonds that people are cultivating on a cultural level.
One of the things that I've done recently in the past few years, the past 2 years or 3 years specifically, is actually getting into anime. But when I got into anime, it was a whole different experience than the traditional cartoons that the United States or any other... Well, I've only watched the United States cartoons, but this whole anime kind of scenario, vision, and ideas that they explain or show in these shows kind of tells me the kind of attitude, the kind of culture, the kind of traditions, but also the kind of mentality that the current people or the current artists, the current storytellers from that region, from that kind of culture, from that kind of background. And just, it just gave me that kind of sense of trying to be aware of different kind of avenues from different kind of places, if there is something that I want to go and research and trying to understand how the kind of possibilities of futures that can be created. And there's someone from a different kind of room in Clubhouse, another, I'm not sure if you know her, Saranyaville, but her name is Deepshika. She mentioned Bollywood. She was talking about how the movies in Bollywood kind of gave a different kind of sense of futures thinking, or looking into the future differently because of the kind of cultural aspect or the kind of mentality is different compared to the United States or any other places. And Emmanuel, I'm not sure if you want to talk more about anime or how you came about or how you use any other pop culture as references for your trend research.
Yes, I also am, you know, an avid fan of anime. I always find it interesting when people say like they find it boring, because I'm like, like any form of media or, you know, pop culture, there's a spectrum to it. There's a variety. There's always something for someone, and the anime that falls into the category of seinen, which is more for an adult audience, I find it very interesting because there's a lot of like futures thinking behind it. And sometimes I wonder if they were aware of how, you know, that they were contributing to futures thinking through this medium. Like, you have anime like Akira, Evangelion, you know, that's on the older side, that very futuristic dystopian. And then you have more kind of like your mid-2000 anime like Code Geass, which is one of my personal favorites because how it imagines the world is there's essentially, if I remember correctly, like three big global powers. And for me, looking back at it, I find it interesting because it adds to that conversation of futures thinking of as climate change, you know, affects our way of living as a global society, are we going to be, I don't want to use the word forced, but I guess forced to kind of reshape how we frame borders, nations, countries, and see how we kind of go from being individualistic and separatist in that sense and changing to more of a communal model of living, which it's not an anime, but like you saw it in Avatar The Last Airbender and the sequel The Legend of Korra. Like in the Avatar The Last Airbender, there's four separate nations, but the events that occurred in that series has an influence in the occurrence of Legend of Korra, because the main character Korra, where she lives, the city, it's a combination of all the cultures of all four nations, and it looks much more different than the previous show. So for me, I also find it interesting through a cultural lens of like, is this kind of a precursor of a possibility for us as a global society of being able to have, you know, I mean, we already do have cities where it's like, it's just this beautiful mix of so many different cultures. And, you know, you see all these little neighborhoods intersecting with each other. Like here in Los Angeles, you have like little Tokyo, little Filipino town, little Ethiopia, you know, Korea town, where they're, you know, specified neighborhoods in the sense of like, you know, they have their cultural namesakes, and but like it's also part of the city, you know, the city's spirit. And it's interesting how a medium like anime also can be used for conversations about like, you know, injustice and different forms, you know, other forms of oppression. Like I I know you and I were talking about My Hero Academia the other day, and it's interesting, this concept of how a society shifts. Like, you know, in the show, the global population aren't metahumans. They aren't individuals with superpowers. But then as the population of metahumans continue to grow, that cultural shift of metahumans being seen as the others, being unpopular, changes as metahumans become the majority of the population. And so I always find it interesting how I learned something new through like a cultural trend research, you know, cultural futures thinking through a cultural lens when I look at things like anime and manga, because I'm never expecting to, you know, have that light bulb head moment. But when I do, I'm always like, I'm glad I'm, you know, like how Vishal was mentioning earlier, like, I'm glad I'm engaging with new methods, new forms of cultural expression.